Good morning, everyone. I had the pleasure yesterday of going to my cousin's 50th wedding anniversary party. Where do the years go? It just rolls along so fast. My sister and I went, and it was a lovely experience. They asked me if I would do a vow renewal ceremony, and I said I'd be honored to, and I did. It was lovely. We talked a couple of weeks ago because I wanted to find out if they wanted anything specific for their ceremony, and my cousin, pretty much jokingly, I think, was talking about the vows and, you know, how he needs to be sure that obey thing is in there. And no, I don't do obey. But I found a story that apparently somebody else thinks that, you know, that would be a good thing. There's a man who found a book. It's called You Are the Master of Your House. And he read this book, and he announced to his wife, "From now on, you need to know that I am the master of this house, and my word is law. You will prepare me a gourmet meal tonight, and when I'm finished, you will serve me a sumptuous dessert. After dinner, you will go upstairs with me, and we'll have sex until I say stop. Then you will draw me a bath, scrub my back, towel me off, and bring me my PJs. Then tomorrow, guess who's going to dress me and comb my hair?" Straight face, she says, "Well, the funeral director would be my guess." Yeah, exactly. Marriage has changed quite a bit, you know, in the years. Now marriage is more of an equal partnership sort of thing. But it hasn't been that many years ago that it wasn't quite so equal. And if you go way back, it was not equal at all. Today we're talking about Queen Esther, and back in those days, it was not very equal at all. Queen Esther did so much for her people. She essentially saved her people. It was through her actions and her courage that the Jewish people were saved from destruction. We're gonna talk about all of that today. We have been looking at all month long. We've been looking at Old Testament characters, and each of those stories has a moral, a lesson that we can learn and we can find useful if we choose to. I love VeggieTales. Anybody ever watch a VeggieTale? Yes, yeah. Well, there is a VeggieTale for Queen Esther, and I kind of played with the idea of playing part of it, but would have taken too much time, so I didn't do that. But the VeggieTales, on the outside of Queen Esther, it says courage. So that's a takeaway. But as we have said before, also, when we go deeper, when we use these stories metaphysically, we can find that they have a deeper meaning for us. So we will be looking at our own Esther and the main characters in this. As I have done for the other stories, I kind of like to lay a little bit of groundwork so we know where we are in the Bible, in time, and so forth. Esther is just this little short book of the Bible. It comes just before Job, and then Psalms, and then Proverbs. A little short. Actually, it turns out that it's basically fiction. It really comes from three fables, old-time fables that have been put together into this story, really and truly to explain the background or the origin, I guess, of the Jewish holiday Purim, if I'm pronouncing that right. So that's how it came about. But you could put this story, these few little pages, you could easily make a movie of this. It's got drama, it's got intrigue, it's got just all kinds of stuff in it. The story is set in about the 400s BCE, and it, one source said that it could well have been in what they call the dispersion. Sometimes when countries would override Israel and Israelites, instead of killing all of them, they would just scatter them. They would send them out to all of the neighboring countries. the temple and being in Israel, in Jerusalem especially, was very important to the Jews, and so to be dispersed like that was very hard for them. But probably this was at one of those times when all of the Jews were dispersed. The story starts with King. I'm going to say this name one time, and then after that I'm going to say the king of Persia or the king, because it's Ahasuerus, otherwise known as Xerxes. But he was the king of Persia when our story starts. Apparently, it was a large area, not just Persia as we knew it then, but like 127 provinces. I mean, it was a pretty extensive holding of his kingdom. And he had a wife named Vashti, who the scripture says was lovely to behold. She was beautiful. So if we think that obey thing is sometimes important today, back then obeying the king was paramount. You know, absolutely had to do it. All of the subjects had to do it, and especially the wife had to do it. As the story starts, the king has instituted this banquet for the people, and so it's like a 7-day banquet, and everybody is eating and drinking and having a good time. And about the middle of the banquet, in front of everybody, the king says that he's going to summon his wife Vashti. Well, she was involved in a banquet for the women. Apparently they were separated. And when the summons came to her by the attendants, she refused. I can imagine the collective gasp, you know, with you know, with nobody refuses the king. I can imagine that he was upset on a couple different levels. One, ego, just ego. He has said in front of all these people, I'll send for my wife. And then also in front of all those people, word came back, she wasn't coming. That's going to make you feel bad. And then on another level, his attendants started talking right away. In fact, I want to share some of this with you. Started telling them, you know, this, you can't let this slip by. Because if you do, then all of the women of the kingdom will think it's all right to disobey their husbands. For this deed of the queen will be made known to all women, causing them to look with contempt on their husbands. So he's really angry personally, and then, you know, now he's got the weight of, oh my gosh, whatever I do is going to be applicable to the whole nation. So his attendants, people who advised him, here's what you need to do. You need to write a directive, an edict, that says that Vashti can no longer come into your presence. Like the early day divorce kind of thing. It says, if it pleases the king, let a royal order go out. Let it be written among the laws so that it may not be altered that Vashti is never again to come before the king. That's a long name. And let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So when the decree is made, all women will give honor to their husbands, high and low alike. This advice pleased the king. So they did that. They wrote this edict and sent it all out. And I have to share this one thing here. This is the feminist in me, and I apologize, but I have to say, I just have to share it. He sent these letters so that to every people in its own language, declaring that every man should be master in his own house. Little did this guy know that he had scriptural precedent for why master of his own house. It says right here. All right, so that's what they did. So now Vashti cannot come before the king. Basically, she is divorced, you know, not going to happen. The advisors went on to tell the king that they thought what they should do would be to invite all of the maidens, the young virgins in the whole kingdom to come. And then they had some kind of beauty ritual thing that they went through, but then they were presented one at a time to the king so that he could choose a new wife. So that went out. There is an important character named Mordecai. You remember the name Mordecai? Jewish man, and he heard about this. He had actually it was a cousin, but he had adopted her, Esther. He had adopted Esther. Her parents had died, so then he adopted her and raised her. He advised her to heed the call and to be one of those that were gathered in the 100, but not to tell that she was Jewish. And she obeyed. So all of these young maidens came together, and they went through their process, and they were presented one at a time, and it was Esther that really pleased the king. When he saw her, he was just taken by her, and decided that he liked her more than any of these other young women that he had seen. So he put the crown on her head, making her the new queen. So now we have a new queen, Esther. Mordecai was out by the gates. Apparently, you could not approach the king. You had to be summoned. So a lot of people would kind of hang out right at the gates. And Mordecai was there. He overheard two of the king's attendants conspiring to assassinate the king. So he told his daughter, he told Esther, who told the king. Then that was investigated. It turned out it was true. Those two men were hanged as a consequence for their plot to assassinate him. And it was written in the annals, it says. It was written in a log of the city. So that information went down. And the king knew that it was Mordecai that had overheard it and passed on the information. It's a very important piece of the story. At the same time all of this with the virgins has happened and the new queen has been picked, the king also has been grooming a leader, and Haman is this man's name. He is apparently pretty good at what he does. He also has kind of my take on this, a big head. He's pretty ego-driven. But he has come up through the ranks, and he is well thought of by the king. The king puts him into a high position, kind of like over all of the other servants, all the other people that serve the king. So he's way up there now. And now Haman decides that he is irritated because some of the people aren't bowing to him. Supposedly, if he's in this position, then everybody's supposed to bow to him and be subservient, you know, do all that. Well, the Jews don't do that. You know, they have one God, and that's who they bow to. And Mordecai happened to be out again at the city gates when Haman walked by. And Mordecai did not bow, and Haman, it was irritating. But he, from his position, he was not going to deal with it himself. So he just let the other servants can see that it's irritating Haman. And they begin to talk to Mordecai to say, why won't you bow to Haman? Day after day, they would ask him, why won't you do this? And finally, Mordecai said, I'm a Jew. They tell Haman that Mordecai is Jewish. So I guess, you know, they didn't know who was Jewish and who wasn't anyway. So they tell him that he's Jewish. Haman gets the idea that he's going to kill he wants to just get rid of all of the Jews. And this is his opportunity. So not just Mordecai, but all of the Jews, because he thinks that they are disrespectful and they don't follow the laws. He goes to the king and basically tells him that, you know, there is a people living among your people here in the kingdom, and they don't follow your rules. It would be my advice to kill all these people. And the king, not paying all that much attention, said, okay, you know, just here's my ring. Go ahead and take care of that. This ring is It's like a signet ring, apparently, and so when some edict is written, then the ring is used as a seal, that which signifies that this has the king's authorization to do this. All right, so Haman has just convinced the king that it's a good idea to destroy all of the Jews. They write the edict, and it goes out to all of the provinces everywhere that this is going to happen. Mordecai hears of it, and he is so upset, so distraught. It says he tears his clothes, and he puts on sackcloth and ashes, which is a symbol. That's the way the Jewish people would mourn. They would grieve, you know, with all of this. So he is really upset. He's going around town and crying, wailing, it said. You know, he's very upset about this. Of course he is, you know, this edict. He's sort of a leader among the Jewish people, it sounds like. Esther hears that Mordecai is upset about something, sends by messenger, what's going on? What's happening? Mordecai sends the message back, here's what's happening, sends a copy of the edict, and then now Esther's upset too. Mordecai asks Esther, suggests to her that it would be a good idea for her to approach the king and make an appeal for their people. Well, she says, via the messenger, she said, everybody knows that if anyone steps into the inner court without the king's summons, they can be killed. Mordecai said, I know, I think that you have the favor of the king, and perhaps this is the reason that you're in the position that you're in. Now, I'm paraphrasing. It doesn't say it exactly like this, but essentially that. So she is pretty scared, understandably so. She suggests that he instruct the Jewish people to fast for 3 days and nights to support in prayer and support her. That's what they do. There's on the third day then, after she gets up from her fast, she dresses and she goes and she stands in the inner court. Well, the king was seated and he happens to see her, and it says that obviously he cares a lot about her, and so he said, Queen Esther, and he holds out the golden scepter, which is, if you touch the golden scepter, that's, you're good. He holds it out, and she comes in and touches it, and he says, what can I do for you? What is your request? So first she said, well, if it pleases my lord, I would like to invite you and Haman to a banquet that I have prepared. So he says, well, sure, I'd be glad to do that. So he calls, summons Haman, they go to a banquet. And during the banquet, he says, what is your request, Esther? And again, she said, well, if it's pleasing to you, I would like to again invite you and Haman to a banquet that I'm going to do tomorrow. And there at the banquet, I will do as you ask, or do as you say, which is tell him what her request is. And he said, okay, sure, no problem. So he tells Haman that they're going to have another banquet the next day. Haman leaves, and he's feeling pretty cocky. You know, I am on top of the world because I alone have been invited to this banquet by the queen and the king. He gets home, and but on the way home, he notices Mordecai yet again. And there's that, you know, because Mordecai did not bow to him. So once again, he's, his family suggests, now he's got the edict, he's got the ring, he's got the edict that they're going to kill all of the Jewish people on a certain day, the 13th day of the 12th month of Adar, whenever that is, you know. But that's the day that all of the Jews are going to be killed. So he decides that he will build, and he does, gallows, and he's going to kill Mordecai the next morning. He's going to go talk to the king and have Mordecai killed the next morning. In the meantime, at the palace, the king can't sleep. So he gets up and he has his servants bring the annals. And I was telling you about what was written in there. So they're reading the annals, and they come across that part where Mordecai had told the king about the assassination attempt. So it's almost dawn now, and the king decides that he really wants to honor Mordecai, you know, to show his gratitude for what he has done. Because he asked, you know, what have we done for this man? And they said nothing. He said, well, we should do something. He asks, is anybody in the outer court? And Haman had just shown up. Now, Haman is thinking that he's going to tell the king that he wants to kill Mordecai. He appears for this. The king is sitting there wanting to honor Mordecai. So he summons Haman in and he says, what would be a good thing to do if I want to honor someone? Well, Haman thinks that he wants to honor him. He said, well, I think that what you should do is you should take a royal robe, one that you have worn, and put it around the shoulders of this man. And then I think that you should take a horse, one of your horses that you have ridden, and let this man ride it. And then I think you should kind of just take him around in this, I got the impression it was like a courtyard sort of thing, to show all of the people your appreciation and your gratitude to this man. And the king says, that's great. I want you to do that. Arrange to do that for Mordecai, the Jew. Haman had no choice but to do that. So he did all of that, and then he went to his house just really upset, because now he has just been a part of honoring this Jewish man, and the edict has already gone out. So he is in a bad way emotionally. About the same time, the king's servants appear to take him to the banquet, you know, that Esther has asked. He gets there, and once again they start eating, and once again the king asks Esther, what is your request? And she said, well, my request is that you let me live, and that you allow my people to live. And he's very confused. What do you mean? So then she explains that Haman has written this edict to destroy all of the Jews, and that those are her people. And I think he says something like, who is this bad man? And she says, it's Haman. You know, the king is very angry now that Haman had contrived all that. He's furious. Haman throws himself on Esther, who is lying, reclining on a couch, it says. King walks back in, and now it looks like Haman is doing something else with Esther. Does you even do this? It would be a great movie, wouldn't it? So he is so angry, and he immediately orders his death. So Haman gets hung on the gallows that he built to kill Mordecai. And we're almost finished, but with the bulk of the story. But the other thing is that you know, Mordecai has just been honored with the royal robes and the horse and, you know, all through the courtyard. The king ends up making Mordecai the second in command, gives him the house and all of that. It's a wonderful story, I think, of good, you know, triumphing over evil. You know? And it's a wonderful story about the courage, especially of Esther. And there's more. There's some metaphysics that we can utilize. Remembering that we each have an Esther aspect, we each have a Mordecai aspect, we each have a Haman aspect. How can we use this? Well, let's look at Haman first. It says that Haman, the name itself means a variety of things: magnificent, splendid, famed, arrogance, trouble. So, you know, you can see that it can be any of those. Metaphysically, though, it says it stands for the activity of the phase of the carnal consciousness, that baser human consciousness in man, Fillmore put the adversary, that gives itself up particularly to working against man's religious thoughts and tendencies. So it is that part of us, that baser human part, that is not in at all alignment with our highest good, higher self for other people. Have you ever been so angry at someone else that you just want to hit them? I mean, really, you want to hit them? I have. There were times when my son's father, my ex-husband, did things, and I could see that my son was hurt. Oh, and it made me want to hurt him. Not proud, just saying that. I think that all of us have had times when that baser part of us has reared up its head, you know, maybe envy or jealousy or something that is not attractive in us. We all have that Haman aspect. What about the king? The king says, the will puffed up by its conquests and dominated by ambition. It is the function of the will to rule. And when man is more ambitious than wise, he often makes a spectacle of himself. And it goes on to describe, this is from Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, by the way. It goes on to describe how the king allows this edict to kill all of the Jewish people without really thinking about it. You know, he didn't put much time or effort into it. He just allowed it to happen. So he made a spectacle of himself. And maybe even considering when he summoned Vashti, he was doing that from an eagle place too, because she was fair to look upon. She was beautiful, and he wanted to show his friends, look how beautiful my wife is. Have we ever been ambitious? Have we ever been driven to do something, you know, at all costs? Sometimes I call it pushing the river. I think we've all got that king, Xerxes too. And then we've got Esther. Do her first. The name Esther means happiness or good fortune, but metaphysically, it is the dissolving power of spiritual love. The dissolving power of spiritual love. How many times have you seen people go on television and publicly say, I forgive so-and-so, when there's been some horrible thing that has happened? You know, sometimes the parents of children who were murdered, I've seen the parents go on TV and say, I forgive, you know, the dissolving power of spiritual love. We all have that. And then there's Mordecai. Metaphysically, it means victorious for truth. And that's how our story turned out. A spiritual power working within each soul for its full redemption. So in our story, we see that, in Esther, we see that will, that ambition of the king. We see that Haman, that the carnal, the need for revenge. You know, he was so angry that they wouldn't bow to him, that he was going to kill everyone. Those two tendencies, that baseness and the ambition, were overcome by this dissolving power of love. And then Mordecai, full redemption. And again, remembering that Mordecai was put second in command. To what? To God. So we can remember then that's when we are aligned with the ruler, God, and Mordecai, the truth, then of course we're going to be victorious. I think it is a beautiful story, whether it's true or not. But I think it's even more beautiful to recognize and realize that we have all these pieces of ourselves, and sometimes we are the king, sometimes we are Haman, sometimes we are Esther, and sometimes we're Mordecai. We all have those aspects of ourselves, and I think it's cause for celebration. We can have our own Purim, which is that festival, that gladness, that joy, that these things have been eliminated and overcome. It's a good thing. God bless. Let's take time now, as we do each week, to practice the presence. So I invite you to get comfortable in your seat, to gently close your outer eyes, take a deep breath in, and release. as we allow ourselves to be fully present and still, stilling our minds and our bodies, we are much better able to hear that still small voice. We are much better able to be open and receptive. Much better able to put aside chattering voices of ambition or anger and become open and receptive and willing. And so we do that now. Feel your body letting go. We know that these are very busy times. Our world seems to go faster and faster. But it is when we take time like this to be still, we get our bearings back. We can once again root ourselves in truth. We can once again feel Source. Feel the true nature of our Creator, us at our very core, love and peace, joy. That is who we are. And so this morning, we sit quietly. We might bring to mind some time in the recent past when we have felt ourselves rising up emotionally in anger or hurt or envy or jealousy or fear. And as we remember that, we also can feel and know this love that is our true nature. So now we allow that love to expand within us by putting our attention, our awareness on love. It grows, and just as we just heard about Esther, the dissolving power of spiritual love. That love that is our true nature spreads within us, melting and dissolving any dis-ease within the mind or heart, bringing comfort and strength. That love soothes, heals, revitalize. Each week, we spend some time in silence, in this presence, in this sacred spirit, at one with our Creator. And this week, let us sit in silence, as we can feel that love, as we are that love in the silence. First Corinthians scripture says that love is patient, love is kind, and so forth. And it goes on to say, love never ends. Love is the truth of us. As we allow ourselves to be filled by the awareness of this love, as we allow ourselves to be the expressions of this love in our world, we become love in expression. We become the light that attracts others. We are able to do greater things that Brian mentioned. And so as we begin to bring our awareness back into this room and into this time, we bring with us this wonderful infusing of that love energy. We bring with us a deep sense of gratitude for the knowledge that we are one with our Creator. Gratitude that love is our truest self. Gratitude that we get to choose to be that in expression. We are grateful. And in that love and in that gratitude, let us together affirm and pray our Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.